And now, you're tuned into Tampa Bay's RBLR Sports.
What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome into RBLR Bucks. We are back in the building, and I am so hyped you're rocking with us today. You know, there's no better spot, no better squad, no better place to talk about Tampa Bay Buccaneers football than right here with the RBLR Bucks crew. So let's set the scene. You know, we are officially in that window, you know, that early April draft month, few weeks out from the draft itself. You know, you can feel it. Tension or the rumors, the smoke screens, the last minute visits, the, you know, the this guy's rising or this guy's falling. Yeah, it's that time. So football might not be on your TV right now, but don't get it twisted. This is one of the most important stretches of the entire year. Offseason, yes, it's still the offseason. It's still my least favorite time on the calendar. Probably is your least favorite time on the calendar as well. Still feels like we're waiting around, but this part, this is where the things get real. This is how championships, this is when they get built now. So, you know, we're going to be talking draft strategy, roster holes, if this happens or if that happens. You know, front office has to get this right or coaches got to get this right. You know, all of it. So, like always, guys, we want y'all in this with us. Seriously, drop your takes. Who are you pounding at the table for, you know, that first round or that second round pick? Who's your sleeper? You know, who do you think we should not touch at all? But, hey, quick shout out to the rest of the RBLR network, you know, holding it down across the city. Lightning, Rays, USF crew, our Tampa Bay Sun, Rays, all of them. So that being said, enough talking around it or talking about it, enough from me. All right, let's get to the squad, folks. You know, because when we talk Bucks, we never do it solo. So first up, you already know the vibes. The energy is unmatched. The takes. Oh, yeah, they're coming in hot. Timeline ready, debate certified, no hesitation. Mr. Zach Blaine, what's the good word, my friend?
Oh, man, excited to be here. I missed last week because of baseball. We almost missed this week because of baseball with the kids. So,
Hey, we missed you last week. But, dude, some real, as we were saying in the chat, dude, some real good picks. I know we were talking about Jalen Kilgore and, yeah, I remember Caden McDonald. So, yeah, man, so happy to have you with us. And, you know, completing the trio, the steady presence, the breakdown specialist. You know, he's not calculating. He's, you know – or, you know, he is calculating the, you know, the cap space, the roster construction, the scheme fits, the draft value. All right. He is Mr. Carter Brantley. What's the good word, my friend?
Oh, man. I just did this really long show with this really annoying guy at the USF show. No, I'm just kidding.
Man.
I'm doing, great, guy. Man. Double duty with Musab Tariq is always a great night. And tonight we finally get Zach Blaine back. Man, we missed you last week, buddy. Last week I was really excited because Jalen Kilgore, man, I think he might be like not a must draft, but like he's become my favorite target for them. Like,
listen, I think that he's going to be the best safety not named Caleb Downs in this draft. Like,
yeah, legit. That's not a.
I think that he's that talented.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. I totally agree. I'm really excited to see what he can do at the next level, and hopefully, it's in a Bucs uniform. I don't know. I was really excited about him. The more I read about him, the more I liked. So I was pretty stoked that you brought him up and you brought him to our attention. I mean, not that he's like some under the radar guy. Like, we're talking as if he's a hidden gem. He's probably going to be like around
before.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like he's going to probably be like a round two guy. So like, yeah, you know, he's not exactly an unknown commodity or anything. We're not saying anything that's setting the world on fire, but it was still cool because I hadn't thought of him as a Bucks target specifically, but now I wouldn't bat an eye if they drafted him. So I'm pretty excited about it. But this week we are talking tight ends and interior offensive linemen. I know tight end, you might be thinking, oh, well, they just brought back Kate Otten. What are they going to do with another tight end? I hear you. It's not necessarily a top shelf need, but Mike Evans just left. So there is potentially a hole at a third pass catching option because Kate Otten, a pretty solid blocker, but man, if he's one of your top three options, your offense probably isn't in great shape. So with that, plus the Bucks run, or not the Bucks specifically, but the NFL in general running a lot of two tight end sets, tight end not exactly out of the question, even for as high as round one. So we'll get right into it. We'll start with that position, and then the second half of the show we'll get into interior offensive line. But Zach Blaine, I wanted to give you the floor because A, you missed last week, and B, I know you're a huge fan of this guy as an Oregon State fan. no, I'm just kidding, but I know
we're gonna have to rub that in a lot because both my first round pick guys for both positions are Oregon guys, and it slightly pisses me off a little bit. But I mean, we've talked about it before. There's no other option in the first round at tight end. As dumb as that sounds, Kenyon Sadiq is going to be a stud at the next level. A 4.39 40. He's not small, but he's not big. Like, he's going to be that receiving tight end, which is something that Tampa's not had in a while, really. I'd say since Gronk, but even Gronk wasn't necessarily the Gronk of old. Gronk was kind of a do-it-all guy. I think that what he can do for an offense is going to be the exact opposite of kind of what Kate Otten does. So seeing a bunch of two tight end sets would be beautiful with Otten and Sadiq out there together. And, you know, we're seeing a lot more buzz that potentially Sadiq could be a completely legit option for Tampa at 15.
Yeah, and I know a first-round tight end is always interesting because, you know, you think of the Kyle Pittses of the worlds or the Dalton Kincaids, but you also have the Brock Bowers, and you have a lot of really talented tight ends in the NFL.
Tyler Warren,
exactly. Loveland from last year, he had a really underrated rookie season. I know Warren, rightfully so, got most of the attention, but Loveland was also very good. So it's not, it wouldn't be totally silly. And of all the tight ends to pick, yeah, like, Zach, like you said, Sadiq's the only guy in round one. He's probably one of the best athletes in the draft, frankly. Like, his combine numbers were insane, combined with the fact that he's 241 pounds or almost 250 pounds. Like, really, really outstanding stuff. Definitely not out there to block, though. You know, if he's blocking for you, then you're probably not using him very well. But that's why it would be such an interesting combination with Kate Otten, because I think Kate Otten sort of becomes that sixth offensive lineman who can also, in a pinch, serve as like a dump off option. And while Sadiq is getting more of the volume of the targets. So he's really interesting, and he's an insane athlete. He really high points the ball really well. The main issue with him is just he can be prone to a silly drop here and there. And like I said, the blocking, but also he hasn't figured out, like, the great ones like Travis Kelce and George Kittle. Like, they figure out how to sit in a zone. You know, they're over the middle and they present themselves to quarterbacks, and he's still figuring that out. But, you know, tight ends, it takes them a while. It takes them a while to settle into that.
I was going to say, it takes them a minute to get that part down. Absolutely. Like, if you remember, Travis Kelce was not Travis Kelce
for
two or three years of his career. Like, before Patrick Mahomes came around, no one knew who Travis Kelce was if you weren't a Kansas City fan.
Right.
So I think that in the right system, I think Sadiq could be one of those guys that we're talking about. Oh, wow, what a steal at 15.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it right on the head. Tight ends in general just take a while to develop. I mean, George Kittle is another one. Like, we just talked about him. Even Kyle Pitts. I know Kyle Pitts had that explosion his rookie year where he, you know, cracked 1,000 receiving yards, and everyone was like, oh, man, this guy's pretty good. But then he had some down years, took a while to figure it out. And then last year, he was really good, probably one of the best tight ends in football last year, frankly. And there were a lot of good tight ends, but Kyle Pitts was up there. So it just takes guys a while sometimes to figure it out at the next level and at all positions, but especially tight end. But Mr. Treek, any closing thoughts on Sadiq? I know we were kind of unanimous. This was the only round one guy. So what were your thoughts when you were watching Sadiq's tape? Did anything stand out?
I mean, no, everything y'all have said. He's a freak athlete. Probably the only tight end I would be like, okay, I can understand this. You know what I'm saying? Just because, you know, you get your tight end round one. My only kind of thought is, you know, how do we really feel about this just based on all the other talent we have out there? You know, would you be fine with this? Just because it, you know, it leaves, kind of puts everything, you know, a round back, you know?
Yeah.
Linebacker's edge. So, maybe a quick question, you know, look, we get Sadiq, but then, you know, what are your thoughts then, you know, after that? Does that change your view on round two?
It's
Yeah.
It's a great question, because when teams make picks like this, you have to factor in not only the player that you're taking, but the players that you're not taking, the players that you're going to miss out on, the opportunity cost. You hear that word kind of tossed around a lot. And the opportunity cost here is that if you spend a first round pick on a tight end, you're not getting that first round edge guy. You're not getting that first round interior linebacker. You're not getting that first round cornerback, which those are three other needs that we're going to get to in later episodes, because we view them as higher needs because, man, they're needs for sure. So, Zach Blaine, what's your take on this? Because I'm a little wary in that respect. That is the only thing that gives me pause with this
pick. You're not wrong. I think the issue becomes more of a, are we staying put at 15? Because if you're staying put at 15, in my humble opinion, there is not an edge rusher or a linebacker worth taking at 15 unless someone in the top 10 is falling, that I don't expect to fall.
Sure.
I've seen a lot of Akeem Mesidor. We'll get into him, I'm sure, in future episodes. Not a fan of him. In fact, all the DNs that I really like are second to third round guys anyway. So if we're staying put at 15, I think you have to take best available player. And in my opinion, that's going to come down to a tight end or a corner right there. As much as I love corner, it's my favorite position in the football field. Like, I could talk about them for days. I would love to go corner, but if Sadiq is there, I think he is a top five player in this draft, period. So to have him there at 15, you almost – it's – I have a feeling this could be one of those, like, Justin Jefferson-type draft falls where, like, he's not really falling, but he – the names that are going to go before him are going to be like, oh, God, I can't believe that this team took so-and-so over Kenyon Sadiq. Sure. Like, so I think it's you've got to do best available player if you stick at 15, because I think if you pick an edge at 15, you're reaching. If you pick a linebacker, an inside linebacker at 15, you're reaching. I think the way that this draft class kind of goes out or comes in is – unfortunately, at 15, your best options are going to be wide receiver, tight end, or corner. And corner and tight end are both at least relative needs for us this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting way to look at it, and a really important way to look at it. Because, like, you know, you're not just – like, we're not just – the Bucs aren't just drafting a player. They also have to draft the draft. I don't know if that makes sense. But, like, they're not just playing we just want to pick the best player available. Like, obviously,
you gotta play cards you're dealt.
Right. Thank you. Yeah. That's where I was getting at. Yes.
I got you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Cause you know, they can wish on a dream that, you know, one of the edge rushers falls. And frankly, if one of the edge rushers that's projected to go as early as they are falls, there might be a reason for it. And that might be reason enough for the Bucs to pass on them too. So,
well, they could be really good, which is reason enough for Tampa to pass on an edge rusher.
Fair enough. We'll see. But, yeah, I'm with you, man. And I also think that there's the component of they're really building for the future, because drafting Sadiq means that they have him, Egbuka, and McMillan as their three best wide receivers moving forward, like long term. So then whether they decide to bring Baker back or not, whether they give him an extension or they move on, I believe the team is set up pretty well for whoever the future quarterback is, whether it's Baker or somebody else. So there's that aspect of it as well. So, yeah, they have a lot of options in round one, and tight end is one of them. Kenyon Sadiq, man, he's a really interesting one. But let's move on to our round two and round three guys. I'll start us off. I went with Max Clair out of Ohio State. He's a really good route runner, and he's pretty solid as a blocker, not necessarily a strength, but not necessarily as bad as Sadiq. He would be more of a complimentary piece to Cade Otton, but we've seen that around the NFL too. It makes it a little bit more unpredictable. Like, it, with Sadiq, it's basically like, oh, well, Sadiq's running the route, Otten's probably going to block, so let's just, you know. With Clair, it would be more of a balanced approach. He's great at high pointing the ball, making contested catches. His combine numbers didn't pop too much, but his in-game athleticism plays a lot higher when you watch the tape. The big thing with him is durability concerns. He had some ankle injuries as well during his time at Ohio State, also a little bit undersized, and those are the main reasons why he'd be a round three guy. He was also playing at Ohio State with some pretty darn good wide receivers. So it's really interesting to see if, you know, maybe he was a victim of limited opportunity with the Buckeyes. You know, they've got so many talented guys. There's only one ball. And obviously he's not going to take catches away from Marvin Harrison Jr. or Smith or, you know, the, some of those blue chip bona fide, you know, round one wide receivers. So he's an interesting guy for me. He was my round two slash round three fella. Mousab Tariq, who is your round two slash round three tight end for this draft class?
Yeah, man. My, you know, round two, round three guy was Joe Royer, tight end, Cincinnati. I'm going to put him as, you know, my guy.
There you go.
For the tight end room. I like what I've seen. You know, first of all, he's a big body, stands at 6'5", 250, you know, wins, you know, because of his size and, you know, violent hands. He's, you know, he's not athletic like Kenyon Sadiq, but yeah, he doesn't, you know, even when it comes to, you know, running routes, you know, he's not someone spectacular or anything like that. He's known actually more for the, you know, kind of, you know, the blocking. You know, he's known to be very, you know, NFL ready when it comes to the blocking. You know, he's a legit inline guy. So obviously, you know, you may be thinking, you know, then why would you want to pair up with, you know, him with K-Dot? And I think he can still, you know, get his, you know, get his reps in, or, you know, I think he can, you know, eat in the end zone, you know, maybe run a two, you know, tight end set or something like that. Again, not going to be anyone who, you know, who wows, you know, the fans or, you know, the coaches, but, you know, fits like a run heavy physical offense. So that's kind of where I'm thinking. This guy, you know, I could probably see him maybe falling a little bit later. If he's available later, I would be open to maybe snagging him later on too. But, you know, unfortunately, just it gets – it's a very steep fall, I think, in the tight end. Well, nothing against the other tight ends, but when we're looking this late, you really want, I mean, I can, now that I'm thinking about it, I can understand, you know, what Zach was saying with Kenyon Sadiq and, you know, who was available at that time. And, you know, we really do need a true, you know, TE1. That's the thing. Sure. So, yeah.
Yeah, I feel you. Royer's a nice, if he was there round four, because I know some mocks have him going round three. And some have him going slip into round four. If he was there round four and the Bucks haven't, addressed the position, I think he would be a really interesting target just because then you have two blocking tight ends. I know that's not exciting. That's not sexy, but it gives Baker a heck of a lot of time. And man, I think we saw it 2 years ago. I know Liam Cohen was still there, but man, the offensive line was really good. And when the offensive line was really good, Baker was like a top 10 NFL quarterback. So having an extra blocking tight end isn't necessarily the worst thing in the world. I know they already have Coke Kieft, and Payne Durham kind of fills that role a little bit too. So maybe not the highest priority, but I do agree. Joe Royer, one of the best, if not the best blocking tight ends in this class. So interesting guy for sure. And he would give them kind of four maulers at the tight end position that can really do their job and just let the other skill position players eat. So that's an interesting one for sure. But Mr. Blaine, who's your round two slash round three guy for the tight end room?
I'm going to stay here in Tennessee and bring in my old boy Eli Stowers out of Vanderbilt. former quarterback turned tight end, so he's still learning the position. Super athletic. He's not going to run as fast as Kenyon Sadiq, but his acceleration is right up there with him. In all honesty, I think that he would be the perfect – person to pair with a guy like K-Dot. He a 7 foot, 7 foot high jumper in track and field. So like he's the perfect red zone threat, in my opinion, to fill like half of the shoes of Mike Evans. Like he's not replacing Mike Evans. Nobody ever will, but he would be a really good red zone threat with the ability to he hand catches balls. So like he's not a body catcher or anything like that, which is a big thing that we see with our boy Cade Otten over there. and he's what I like even more is that he's really good with running after the catch, which is something that Cade Otten, I think, does none of. But he's with him being newer and a quarterback switch to tight end. He not the best run blocker, something that would have to develop. But he lines up at slot, and he's actually a pretty solid blocker out of the slot position. So it's something that I think he's got the tangibles to do, but not the skill level right now. He's going to be probably a second-round pick, but if he's there in the second round. I would not be upset if Tampa took him in the second round.
Yeah, no, I really like Stowers a lot as a receiving tight end for sure. He's got that quarterback background is super fun because then, you know, learning the position, obviously it's going to be a tough transition to the NFL level, but having that quarterback background makes it a little bit easier, a little bit more of a background knowledge in that sense. I'm really excited to see how he can perform at the next level, because I think he has a lot of intangibles and tools with that athleticism, with that quarterback background, the mental side of it as well, to really be successful at the next level. I love that you mentioned him lining up in the slot, because I think a big thing that's come out with the McVay offenses and all the motion and stuff like that, and Zach Robinson obviously part of that Sean McVay tree, is that, you know, obviously you think of the Bucs as having Buka and Godwin, you think, oh, well, those guys are two slot receivers. And it's like, well, sure, but with the amount of motion that they do and all that stuff, like, it doesn't matter nearly as much where they're aligned. And so, you know, a guy like Stowers could really be successful even lining up in the slot with Godwin or Buka moving around him. So I'm really excited for him as well. I really liked him too. Mr. Tariq, who's your day three tight end? We're going to get to the hidden gems portion of
the end room. Yeah, man, this is where it gets real fun. You know what I'm saying? We're starting off with, Tanner Kozio, tight end from Houston. Dude, this guy's racked up like nearly 2,500 career snaps. He led all tight ends in the FBS, in catches his senior year in the Big 12. 6'6", he's soft hands. Overall, you know, blocking is, you know, not really a thing for him. He's gonna, you know, have to be kind of, you know, put in, you know, scheming in his spots to survive. So the physicality effect, I'm kind of, you know, worried about him. I feel like, you know, any kind of, you know, big body, you know, guy just jams him or something, and the route's kind of just dead right there from the jump. So could be a useful, you know, TE2. Maybe, you know, wrong system ends up being a camp body. It just, yeah, you know, this is where just like, you know, hey, man, wish you all the best. Let's see what you can do. Just hoping for a role player, but at this point you already have some of those guys already. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he would be a really interesting target, for day three. Like you said, we're talking about day three fellas, and he'd be a really interesting target if the Bucs decided to just go all, maybe like not all defense, but they avoided skill position players entirely in the first few rounds, and they get to round five and they're like, oh, well, hey, look at this guy, Tanner Kozio. I think he would be a really interesting piece to add to the tight end room. And he was at Ball State, I think, at first, and then he transferred over to Houston, and he was starting as a freshman at Ball State, because, you know, it's Ball State, no offense, but
he was known to ball. Yeah, he balled out at the MAC, but then people were like, hey, don't get it twisted though, man, this guy also,
he was really good in the Big 12 as well.
In the Big 12 as well. Yeah
absolutely. I mean, and you know, Musab and I are big MAC fans. We love us some MACtion. So
not,
you know,
not the
we
proudest were... thing, but yeah.
Hey, you know, it happens. But Tanner Kozio, gotta love it. But Mr. Blaine, who's your day three tight end out of this draft?
Sorry, I got the hiccups trying to get rid of them. I'm going to go to, oh, God, a kid from Tampa. Oh, this is going to kill me. He went to USC, Michael Trigg, and finished his career at Baylor, but he's same kind of, oh, my goodness, this is the worst timing. Hey, Carter, why don't you go and then come back to me real quick? I'm going to hold my breath for a minute.
No worries, brother. I love Michael Trigg, though. He went to Carrollwood Day School. That's a great shout out. But no, my guy is Oscar Delp, and he is my guy for this tight end room. The 40 time was eye popping at a 4.49, and he had excellent vertical and broad jump numbers. The only problem is he's not the most fluid athlete. His agility is a little bit of a question mark, and he struggles in the open space to make guys miss. More of a round five guy at this point, but he's a decent route runner. And with that speed at 6'5", it is, there's some talent there. There's something there that you could work with if you're an NFL team. He's also pretty strong, so blocking won't necessarily be a massive issue, but also not necessarily a strength either, but that's fine. You know, that's not necessarily what they'd be drafting him for. you know, he's a guy that Zach will appreciate this. He's a guy that will probably be really good in Madden. Like, he will probably be an excellent Madden player in that he'll be a really fast tight end speed wise.
He's going to be that 70 overall tight end that just cooks yes. all these 99 overall defenders. Yeah.
Yes. And then you see him in real life and you're like, wow, that doesn't know. That doesn't
Tyquan Thornton of tight ends.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, Oscar Delp out of Georgia. He's a Bulldog. He's my guy. Probably, like I said, probably a round five guy, but yeah, there's something there. There's something to work with Oscar Delp, and he would be an interesting addition to this tight end room for the Bucs. But Zach Blaine, please give us some more on Michael Trigg, because
we are good to go. So Michael Trigg, he's another Eli Stowers, but a little bit rangier. Another speed guy. He's not going to be your inline blocker, but out of the slot, he can block. He'd be good in motion, just like we had talked about with Eli Stowers. He is a guy who I think, again, pairs really well with Otten. I don't know that he would be a tight end one option necessarily, but he wouldn't be far off from it given time to develop. Super athletic, really good at route runner, but again, he struggles to catch the ball and through contact. So as a tight end, unless you're running deep routes, like, you're probably going to be getting contact on the catches. So it's something that there's stuff to worry about, but if a round six or seven pick, I think that he could be a good developmental piece, almost like Devin Culp, but more upside than Devin Culp, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting because there's a lot of variation on his draft grades. Like, there are round six, round seven, and then there's like some websites that I was looking at for him was all the way in round four, and it's like, what? Like, what are y'all looking at?
Because I've seen round four. I think that's an outlier. I put him somewhere. I think round six is a good spot for him, but I wouldn't be shocked to see him at 5 to 7. Like, if he went round five, I'd understand it because he does have the. I do think he has a lot of upside if he can stay healthy and on the field, because he was suspended at one point from USC for undisclosed reasons and little things like that, which it could be something as little as like, he had bad grades. Like,
sure.
It was never, at least as far as I saw, it was never released on why he was suspended, but that's why he left USC. I think that if he went round five, I wouldn't be upset if we took him in round five. I'd like to get him round six, but it's one of those things where 5 to 7 is the range I see. I think round is a little bit crazy for him, in my opinion.
No, I agree, because the concerns are legit with three schools in 5 years. Like, he bounced around a lot, USC, Ole Miss, and then Baylor. And then there's also the run blocking, which he's pretty much not going to be able to do, like, at all. Like, he's super light, but he's got that length, man. Like, I think he might have set a record for arm span or wingspan or something like that. It's insane. Like you said, just super rangy in terms of like just arms for days, kind of so to speak. So, Michael Trigg, he's definitely a day three guy. He comes with some baggage, some reasons not to pick him, but that's why he's a day three guy. There's some reasons to dream high on this guy. So, and he's a Tampa guy. You can't go wrong with a Tampa guy. Well, you can, but you know, I'd like to think you can.
I was going to say, I've seen it a few times.
Yeah, we've seen it quite a few times. Although Nelson Aguilar was a Tampa guy. I loved Nelson Aguilar.
Oh, yeah.
Bro, he might have had some drops. He might not have been, you know, Justin Jefferson or anything, but man, he was fun to watch. Anyways, if you're looking to upgrade your wardrobe, much like the Bucks might be looking to upgrade their tight end room, definitely head to shop.rblrsports.com. We've got you covered. Use the promo code CANNONS to get 10% off your entire order. That's CANNONS. Type that bad boy in. Get that 10% off discount. You can get some real cool swag because, you know, the draft's coming around the corner. If you're looking to get a little draft day outfit, you know, I know that movie's kind of terrible, but, you know, draft day is a real thing, right? So you're going to a draft party. We'll be doing a draft show. So even if you're just looking to tune in and look spiffy while you're watching us, you know, that's not the worst thing in the world. So head there.
I enjoyed draft day.
Well, I did too, but like I enjoyed it, but I also recognize that it's like a bad movie. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm out of touch. I thought it was a decent movie.
Well, I'm sorry. I might be a jerk on this one.
Ruined my whole world, man.
Oh, I'm sorry. My apologies. Zach has a draft day on his desert island list. That's one of the one of the five best movies. It's his Citizen Kane. Oh man. No, I like I said, I actually really enjoy draft day. Like I've watched it kind of an obscene amount of times too, but I don't know. Kevin Costner and Jennifer Garner. They're a weird watch as a
fair. I'll give you that.
Yeah. Yeah. Although Chadwick Boseman's in it and he's fantastic. He's like the best part of the movie for me. Yeah. But and then Arian Foster has like a cameo in it and it's kind of weird. And yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of weird stuff in that movie, but there's also some really fun stuff in that movie. I'm with you. I do love that movie, but I'm also kind of like, wow, there are some parts of this that I'm like weird. But anyways, after that little, I love that we had a little diatribe about draft day. We gotta get movies incorporated into our
draft. Oh, that would be so much fun.
Yeah, we can talk some film. But anyways, we're moving on to interior offensive line. This is a really interesting position because the Bucs don't necessarily have an obvious need at this spot because Ben Bredesen's there, Cody Mauch is there. Obviously, Graham Barton, they spent a first-round pick on, so they're going to give him another year to try to bounce back from a tough 2025. And then, obviously, Tristan Wirfs and Luke Gadecki are excellent. But it's one of those things where Ben Bredesen might be better served as a backup, sort of swingman, playing the multiple guard spots and serving as a backup. And then if they address the position in round one and draft a starter, then that offensive line goes from, like, pretty good to being probably one of the best in football. So it's really interesting, the conversation that we're going to have around this position. And we'll start with our round one guys. And Mr. Blaine, I'd love to give you the floor to talk about another Oregon Duck. So who's your round one guy for interior?
Listen, offensive? You don't have to put it that way, okay? It hurts my heart enough to even admit that they're a good football team. I maybe go as far as, say, a great football team. But I've got Emmanuel Pregnon. I believe that's how you pronounce his name. Honestly, he's just kind of a stud all the way around. Like, I know that's such a cop-out, but it might be a reach at 15. It would be a reach at 15. And not might. It would be, because I think his projection right now is a day two guy, round two. But I think he would slot in perfectly at left guard for us. He would be an instant starter. He's only allowed one sack and two hits, two pressures, over 910 snaps at Oregon. Like, they play a really, really tough competition, and for him to play that well, big hands. But again, I think the biggest problem is just it would be a reach in round one, or at least at 15 it'd be a reach. But I do think that he would make us significantly better right away if we did take him. So it's kind of one of those things, like we were talking before, it makes us better, but is it worth it at 15 kind of a deal? I think – Hobbs guy is the only guy I'd be okay with at 15.
I'm with you. I think Pregnon is def. Yeah, it's tough because he's definitely, if he is there in round two for the Bucks, then it's a bit of a surprise because he's mostly early round two, late round one guy for most.
Yeah.
That's sort of the consensus around him, but I do really like him. Like, I do think he's going to be a starter on day one for pretty much whoever drafts. And he's really, really outstanding. The only problem with him is just that he's not a center. Like, he is a guard. He is a guard.
Yeah, 100%. There's almost no positional versatility for him. Right. Like, you can play left guard, right guard, and yeah. that's really it. And that makes you a little less valuable.
Sure.
To a team like the Bucks. Through the Bucks, I mean, how many different offensive line sets did we run last year?
Yeah.
Oh, God, a lot. Yeah.
It makes you a little less valuable to a team like the Bucks, mm-hmm. but you look at some of those teams that draft guards really high and how those guards turn out, and they're usually pretty solid. They're not always solid, but, I mean, you can get really, really good guards who only play guard, and that's, you know – as much as I know, like, the NFL has gone to this positional versatility way, like, you've got to be able to play two different positions on the offensive line, I do think it's super important to, if you're great at left guard or right guard, like, there's value to that, in my opinion. And while I think he does fall between, like, 30 to 40 range, pick 30, pick 40 range, I don't expect him to be there for us round two.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's always the battle, right? Like having to balance positional versatility and the ability to do a lot of different things with like also just being good. Like, you know, I know that sounds simple, but like actually being a good player, because you see it a lot with some of the, like they call them chess pieces on the defensive side of the ball. And you can get a Nick Emmanuel where you're like, oh my gosh, this guy like didn't single-handedly transform the Seahawks defense. They had a really good defense before they drafted him, but man, he took them to another level, like his ability to move around. But then you also get Isaiah Simmons, who is out of the NFL, you know, like, and that's no knock against him. Like, it's tough to make that transition, but a big strength of his was like, oh, well, he could play safety. He could play in the box. Like, he can be a linebacker. And then it just turned out that he wasn't really good at either of them. And it was just like, oh, okay. So this guy just.
And I think you kind of nailed it on the head. Like, Isaiah Simmons is a perfect example because, if I'm not mistaken, he played more linebacker in college.
Yeah.
And drafted, and they're like, oh, well, you're fast enough that you could play safety.
Right.
That's almost like saying Sonny Styles should play safety in the NFL. Like, I don't think he came from safety. Like, he played safety in college a little bit. But to tell me that that man is not an inside linebacker, like, I think that that hurts people to an extent to be versatile in what position you can play, because now you're throwing this guy like, oh, well, even though he's really fast, like, is he really agile enough to play safety? Right. But now you've got a guy training at safety and linebacker, and you're not focusing on linebacker. And, I mean, offensive line's a little bit different because it's basically the same concept, like, see guy, block guy. I know there's more to it. I'm kind of hating on the offensive line, but –
on the interior, it's a lot easier. When you start kicking guys out, then it's like, oh, that's – great. Yeah. No, I do feel you though. It is a really interesting conversation to be had. And that's kind of one that can be brought up for a lot of these interior offensive linemen, because the discussion goes towards, well, if they're such a good offensive lineman, why aren't they a tackle? And frankly, that's not necessarily a bad point. And that's sort of why some NFL teams view round one drafting an interior offensive lineman as like taboo, or like, oh, you know, positional value and all that stuff. And maybe there's some truth to that. Like anything else, and I love to sit on a fence. You know me. Like anything else, there's a gray area. You know, there's more of a middle ground. You have to find a good balance. Which, speaking of versatility, my guy for round one in this interior offensive line is Spencer Fano. We talked about the reach for Zach Blaine's Oregon Duck, Mr. Pregnon. This guy is the opposite. He is probably not going to be there at pick 12 or pick 15. I'm sorry, but there's a possibility that he is, because he only played right tackle at Utah, and given he was playing opposite an excellent offensive tackle. So it's kind of one of those things where, like, hey, you can't necessarily blame them for putting him there. But his arm length is a massive concern. It's one of the worst at the offensive tackle position. So it's really tough. And he also struggled against speed rushers in college football, which also speaks to why I am high on him potentially playing on the interior instead of sticking at right tackle, or if a team really wants to move him to left tackle. I don't know if that's realistic. So we'll see. Some team might take a shot on him because he was just excellent at Utah, and they weren't playing nobodies. You know, they were in the Big 12. They were playing some solid competition. He's uber talented. So he could very easily make the transition to interior offensive line, even though he didn't necessarily play there at all in college. But he's a day one starter guy. Another guy that would make this offensive line one of the best in football. He had just tremendous combine records as well. But like I said, the big thing for him is just his arm length and his ability to handle speed rushers on the edge, which wouldn't matter necessarily as much if they kicked him inside. But he's just such a good communicator. Like, he combines the athleticism with the mental game that I think that he could really be an excellent player at this next level. So Spencer Fano, my round one interior offensive line guy. Mr. Musab Tariq, who is your round one interior offensive line guy for the Bucs?
Yes, sir. All right. First and foremost, I want to make sure I pronounce his name correctly. This is Mr. Olai Vavegani. Or Olai Vavega Oioane. All right. It's a guard sounds good to you. Yeah, guard out of Penn State. Little fun story. He didn't play football until his like sophomore year. 3-star recruit, and then went from Washington to Penn. Zero sacks, zero hits, four hurries across 613 pass blocking snaps in 2025. Kind of an absurd number against, you know, like Big Ten competition.
Yeah.
He's already got that kind of NFL ready anchor. The bull rushers, not really moving this guy. You know, when you watch his tape, he's got real good grip strength. The hands, you know, once they lash on to the defender's chest, basically over. That's what the reports were saying. So 90th percentile vertical at the combine for a guard, lower body explosion is real, even if the 40 is kind of average. Best fit for this guy is probably just like a power gap heavy offense. Wants to protect the passer first, then run between the tackle second. So overall, though, I mean, he is projected from what I've seen, to be like a mid first round, end of first round. So I do think that this is attainable. I think this guy's an absolute animal. Now, the thing is kind of what, with Zach's guy, based on what I've seen, the versatility is not there. Just, left guard, right guard. But even then, I feel like it's still an upgrade. Guys, we've had so many just injury bugs and all of that. I mean, yeah, Zach said how many different offensive line sets we had. It was horrible. So if we can just get any damn good guy out there, at least, we can at least solidify our guards.
Yeah.
That takes – at least that fills one kind of, hole.
For sure. So.
Even on top of that, even with, the guys we have right now, it's not that I'm, super impressed by, with, Cody Mock or, Feeney's, he's on a 1 year. So I think this guy, be like a long-term answer kind of situation.
For sure. Yeah. I think the injury concerns that the Bucks had with cornerbacks over the year for whatever, like a decade, it feels like. Those injury concerns struck the offensive line last year. Yeah. It felt like they had injury after injury after injury. I mean, Cody Mauk didn't even really play last year. It was kind of sad because he looked awesome. Yeah, he looked awesome in 2 years ago. And he's unfortunately going to be due for a new contract pretty soon. And this could be a situation where the Bucks look at him and say, hey, like, we'd love to keep him around, but man, he could be priced out of the Bucks. Area, which is where the Bucks could just replace him as a starter next season with one of these guys and keep Ben Bredesen around and sort of that's how they feel that. We'll see. That I really like all of our guys, honestly, from the interior.
I will say I think I'm not even going to attempt to say his name. So just
O-I. That's what we call it. O-I.
Yeah, I think that he is going to be one of those guys that we're talking about as like the best guard in football in 3 to 5 years.
Wow. Not even. Yeah, I don't disagree. I
mean, two to four years. Like,
yeah, legit. I don't disagree. Yeah, he's really good. And the Seahawks drafted a guy out of North Dakota State whose name I'm blanking on right now. But they drafted him in the first round, and he immediately made a pretty –
Zabel, right?
Yeah, Zabel. Yeah, and he made a pretty big difference. I mean, obviously, they won the Super Bowl and whatnot, and it was a lot because of their defense and Sam Darnold playing pretty well. But their offensive line was pretty atrocious at times, really over the past few years, frankly, and he brought a lot of stability. So the Bucks could kind of use something similar. Not that the offensive line has been nearly as bad as the Seahawks, and frankly, 2 years ago it was one of the best groups in football. So if they can stay healthy, they'll replicate that. But this kind of provides some insurance, and it makes them like pretty easily a top five group. So yeah, I wouldn't necessarily be totally upset if the Bucks went interior offensive line in round one. Wouldn't be my favorite pick in the world, don't get me wrong, but OI would be a good one. He's a really, really talented player, and I'm pretty high on him as well. So let's move on to the round 2/round 3 guy. I've got Chase Bisontis out of Texas A&M. Really short arms, which speaks to, I just talked about it with Fano. That kind of speaks to his interior offensive line status. Really explosive athlete, though. He had a great vertical and 40 time, really good 3-cone as well. He's got pretty good strength. He showed it on that bench press and a good broad jump as well. His size is about average, though, and his penalties, my goodness, they were bad. 19 over 3 years, not great. But he provides a little bit more versatility, which is definitely needed for a guy like this. More of a round 2 fella. If he's there in round 3, I would be kind of surprised for the Bucks. But he would be a solid round 2 choice for the Bucks. he would definitely give Bredesen some competition. I don't feel as confident that he would be starting day one as I would with Fano and OI and some of these other fellows that we've brought up for the round one guys. But he would be a very interesting depth piece, more of a left guard, but he's, like I said, a little bit more versatile. So I would feel good about him being a backup interior offensive lineman for sure. But Zach Blaine, who is your round two / round three interior offensive lineman?
I am going with quite possibly the greatest mullet in the entire draft, Jennings Dunker out of Iowa. So technically he is a tackle prospect, round three guy, but I think he's got 33.5-inch arms, which is about a quarter inch shorter than Pregnon. So I think he could play, he could shift inside and play really, really well. 3-year starter out of Iowa, just a big guy, 6'5". Oh, yep, Hazel wants her cheese pizza. Sorry about that, guys.
No.
But I do think that he could shift in and play a really, really good guard, and I think that he would challenge Bredesen for a day one starter with the ability to get up to the next level and stick with and kind of dominate linebackers. Just kind of everything about him I like, just his whole personality. Like, I don't know if you've seen any interviews with him, but he is just a good old boy, like long red mullet, kind of brings back the oh God, I'm blanking on his name now. Oh, our Super Bowl winning center.
Oh, Ryan Jensen.
Jensen, yeah. Jensen, it kind of brings those vibes back, and he's not – there's really nothing that I see that's wrong with him outside of – I would like him. I prefer him at guard over tackle, but he is a tackle prospect, which is kind of irritating to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really interested in where he lands and how he plays because, yeah, I mean, it's just, he's just, those Iowa fellas, man, they're always pretty good. Those corn fed fellas are tough, but yeah, they're pretty cool. Yeah, I'm really interested to see where he goes. And like you said, if he's evaluated as a tackle, interior offensive lineman, where he ends up playing, that's also an interesting piece. But it plays into the versatility aspect of it, especially for these mid to late round guys. You know, the versatility piece of it makes it a lot easier for teams to stomach. They're not drafting a guy who's going to be, you know, just kind of pigeonholed into one position. They can move him around a little bit more and they feel more comfortable with him as a backup. So it's not a bad thing for him that he's necessarily being evaluated as a tackle, but I do feel you. I do think he slots a lot better on the interior. So I do definitely agree with where you're coming from. So we'll see how he plays though. We'll see how he moves around the chessboard that is this NFL draft. But Mr. Musab Tariq, who is your round two / round three guy for the interior offensive line?
Yeah, my round two, round three guy. I'm actually making an audible after doing some hard thinking just on, big topic of injuries. And I had Billy Shrout, but I'm actually going Jalen Farmer from Kentucky. This guy's an absolute athletic beast. Combo numbers are real good. 4.9, 40, 37 bench reps, like 98th percentile for guards. Played 64 snaps against Auburn without a single pressure or penalty, you know, so he can hang, you know, with the big dogs. The only thing though is that he really just has like zero positional versatility. Every snap of his college career was at right guard only. So that's going to be like a real kind of a, you know, sort of roster concern. This guy only knows how to play right guard. Again, it just kind of, you know, put your draft stock a little lower. But other than that, though, I mean, yeah, he's a nasty finisher. He's got the length and the hand power. Can be slow at recognizing, you know, and reacting, you know, rushers when exchanging gaps. But other than that, though, I think better choice than who I was going to go with, Billy Shrout, just because the injury concerns. Billy Shrout is an animal, 0 sacks, 2 hurries. In 2025 before his MCL, you know, as an injury. And he's had two straight seasons ending with, you know, like lower body injury. So as, you know, much as a beast as he is, and I'm sure as of right now, he probably maybe has the medical green light. Just with our offensive line, I don't think he fits. I don't think he's going to gel well. Our guys are already beat up enough or get beat up enough. He needs to go to a healthy team. So,
Right. Yeah, I don't blame you, man. I really liked Billy Shrouth too. I mean, those Notre Dame guards, man, they pretty nasty. I mean, you look at Quinn and Nelson. I hate to put a school label on a type of guy, but man, he is pretty outstanding. So he's an interesting one, but like you said, those injury concerns can be kind of daunting, especially for a mid-round pick type of fellow like this. I mean, they're not all going to be winners, you know, they're not all going to be perfect, don't get me wrong, but especially for the Bucks, like you said, you don't want to, maybe they don't want to be flirting with a guy that has that kind of injury concern. I don't necessarily blame you for changing gears there, but hey, it's nice to have two guys mentioned, so that's kind of fun. So let's go to our day three guys, sort of the hidden gems. I'm going to start with my guy, and I'm cheating a little bit because this guy might be a round three guy or a round four guy. So I'm cheating a little bit by calling him a day three fella. But Kalen Rutledge out of Georgia Tech, he was insane last year. Probably one of the better, more underrated interior offensive linemen in football last year at the college level, coming out of Georgia Tech. They had a lot of injuries, and yet they were one of the best running football teams in CFB last year. He was really excellent in run protection as well as pass protection, run blocking and pass protection. He's just a stud. I really like him. Unfortunately, so do a lot of other teams. It seems like he's kind of a rising star in a lot of consensus boards. He might not last through round three, unfortunately. But, you know, if the Bucks picked him up in round three, he's my guy, so I'm not necessarily super upset about that. But, Kalen Rutledge, he's my guy for this draft. Hopefully he ends up in a Bucks uniform. But even if he doesn't, I have a lot of high hopes for him. Zach Blaine, who's your day three interior offensive line?
I'm going to go another guy with probably no positional versatility here, which is the exact opposite of what we want our late-round guys to be. But he started 7 games as a reserve at Texas in 22. 14 and 23. He started 16 games at right guard in 24 for Texas. That offensive line was named the Joe Moore as a finalist for the Joe Moore Award, which is the top O-line in the nation. And then he was third team all SEC after starting 13 games in 25. DJ Campbell out of Texas, former top 10 overall recruit, has all the athletic ability to be really, really good, but kind of just didn't put all of it together at Texas. Like, he wasn't bad by any means, but he just wasn't top 10 recruit kind of.
Sure.
If that makes sense at all. If we can get him trained up and has time to develop, if we could stay healthy on the offensive line, I think that DJ Campbell is a guy that could come in a year or two and be a really, really good replacement for a guy like Bredesen or Cody Mauch being on that contract, the final year of his contract. So I would love to get Jennings Dunker, but I think that DJ Campbell is probably my guy in this draft as a 6th to 7th round guy.
Very cool. I love it. Mr. Mustafa Tariq, who's your hidden gem? Who's your day three guy for this draft?
Yeah, my day three guy is Inez Cooper, guard from Miami. Started 47 of his 51 career games at right guard. One of the top-ranked offenses. Experience, he's got it under his belt. Stands at 6'6", over like 1,700 pass blocking reps. The pass pro track record is it's legit, man. So, violent hands, once he gets his hands on your chest, you're not getting free. But the thing is, though, this guy ain't got no speed at all, dude. Ran like a 5.5 240, third percentile for speed. So athletic rushers are going to have a field day with him because this guy, has no lateral quickness. He's going to get exposed. And, reports and scouting, scouts have said, pads stay high. Run blocking is not exactly there. So, kind of right team, right system kind of situation. But I'll probably say, look, I mean, if the guy's day three, if you see some potential, why not pick him up? You know what I'm saying? Especially in this situation. I mean, you want depth. So, that's why I'm going with this guy.
Yeah. I mean, it's always worth, you know, or not always, but it, you know, got to take flyers on some guys, you know, got to dream on some fellas, or just hope that they can be fun practice squad guys in some cases. You know, that's kind of fun too. So, yeah, that'll bring us to the end of our episode. Really appreciate y'all for tuning in. Hit that like and subscribe button on the way out if you like what you heard. We're going to keep our draft coverage going all the way up until draft day. We aren't going to necessarily be cinematic or anything like the movie, but we're going to be doing a show. So definitely tune in for that. And we'll keep
a great movie. Let's
hopefully that's right. So we'll be back next week with some more positions. Next week we might do a little bit of cornerback action just for Zach Blaine. Also the Bucks probably need to draft cornerback. So that and maybe interior linebacker. So we'll be talking about those two positions next week.
Oh man, don't tease me, Carter.
Oh, hey now. So definitely stay tuned in. Give us a follow at RBLR Sports or at RBLR Bucks. Thank you, my two wonderful co-hosts and the super producer, Mr. Eureka Wheeler. Really appreciate y'all. And until next week, and as always,
go Bucks.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.